Are you a nonprofit professional who's feeling overwhelmed and burnt out? Well, welcome to the Lead with Heart podcast. I am your host, Haley Cooper. On this podcast, we will share stories of leadership, courage, and empathy that'll help you learn to take care of yourself, your staff, organization, and community. You will hear from nonprofit leaders who have been in your shoes and have learned best practices to raise more revenue and make a greater impact. Let's thrive together.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Lead with Heart podcast. Today, I have Sabrina Walker Hernandez, who is the president and CEO of Supporting World Hope. This is a nonprofit and mission-driven consulting agency specializing in strategic planning, leadership development, and board education. And I am just so honored that you reached out and that we get to have this lovely conversation.
I am so happy to be here that we get to geek out together over nonprofits, right?
Yes, like I said off camera, I could talk about it all day long. And I'm so excited to learn about your view and the work that you do to help nonprofits and mission-driven companies. So I always start with this question. Can you tell me a little bit more about your background and how you decided to start Supporting World Hope?
Well, yeah, I've been in the nonprofit industry since, if you go way back, I started out in the church. My mom was a missionary. And I grew up, if you needed church robes, if you needed to go to on a field trip or anything like that, you had to do fundraising. And so as I grew up, I went away from that and thought I wanted to be a lawyer. And so when I was in college, I did an internship with a nonprofit called Advocacy Resource Center for Housing because I wanted to learn about mediation. And when I did the internship, I worked with a lot of attorneys and I realized, yeah, I don't want to be an attorney, but I fell in love again with the nonprofit industry as a whole. And so I got my MPA and I immediately sought employment with a nonprofit at the graduate school. And I did 20 years in the Boys and Girls Club. And in the Boys and Girls Club, I was able to do direct services. I was operations for 5 years and I spent 15 years as a nonprofit CEO. And then in 2018, when I was retiring, I was all geared up, 20 years, I got diagnosed with cancer. I got diagnosed with not one cancer, but two blood cancers, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and multiple myeloma. And they basically said a lot of it was due to stress. And so when you are going through chemo and the treatment for this, you have to do a stem cell transplant. And so when you do a stem cell transplant, you're in the hospital for 30 days. And so as I was laying there quarantined for 30 days, I thought, I do not want anyone else, no other nonprofit leader to have to go through this. And so especially if you're a nonprofit that does not have a linkage to a national office, who is supporting you? And so that's where I launched my company, Supporting World Hope, because I wanted to help those nonprofit leaders who did not have that corporate support. I wanted to make sure I was a resource to them so they wouldn't have to go through what I went through.
Wow, that's so beautiful. And thank you so much for sharing. You're so strong and courageous for taking this traumatic experience that you had to then give back to others to make sure that they don't go through the same thing that you did. And when you were laying in the hospital bed, what were some of the key reflections you had? A CEO, it's a stressful job. You wear a lot of, like you said, at your 20 years at the Boys and Girls Club, you did it all. You did programs, you did operations, you did fundraising. And as a CEO, it's doubled or tripled that responsibility. So what were some of your key reflections as a CEO that now you're able to gift to other people?
Well, the key reflection was, as I was going through this consulting journey as well, I started off really broad and then I narrowed down in what I think is needed in order for a CEO to be successful in their nonprofit organization. And that's where I said, if I can focus on board development and education, so key, leadership development for the CEO themselves, and strategic planning, because we don't take time to write a plan and have a vision. And if I can focus on those three things, that is going to help a CEO of a nonprofit move from waving their hand to say, hey, I'm drowning, and people think they're saying hi, to maybe waving their hand and it's more of, come on, come with me, let's do this vision together. So that was the goal. That is still the goal. I want them to feel supported. But in order to feel supported, they have to be confident and take ownership in their leadership ability. And once they can do that, then they can confidently and without deference lead their board of directors. And if we can get the CEO and the board of directors to be visionary, then we can get a strategic plan in place where we can take that organization from struggling and having that day-to-day mindset to having that visionary mindset.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I think board education and development is obviously a pain point for every single nonprofit. And leadership development, I think it's so crucial for not only CEOs, but just nonprofits to invest in the leadership. And they're the ones that are holding the organization. They're the ones that are delivering on the mission. And so what are some of the pain points you come across when you're trying to address leadership development? And whether it's the beliefs and mindsets. Like you said, they have to believe in the confidence of themselves. And I think leadership development isn't necessarily looked at in the nonprofit sector. In the public sector, it's part of your journey from when you enter an organization. But because it comes with overhead and it costs money that would neither go into the organization, board of directors stand back and they're like, no, we won't invest in that. So what are some of the pain points that you see leaders who are reaching out to want to do this work? And how do you coach them to overcome some of those barriers?
So you just said a mouthful, Miss Haley. I just last night, I watched Uncharitable. And I don't know if you've had a chance to watch it yet. And it talks about overhead and how we see overhead. Well, you know what? I will say this again and again. The system is flawed. The system is flawed because we don't invest in our CEOs as far as compensation. That's one. The system is flawed because you are not allowed to invest in marketing and advertising. And so we have a flawed system that I hope is changing. So if people can go and watch Uncharitable, that is going to be one of the things that I would say do to start changing our mindset around overhead. Because at the end of the day, if you count people as overhead, who is supposed to implement the programs? You can't implement the programs without people. The other thing when it comes to this compensation conversation, you want to attract the best people in the nonprofit industry because you're trying to solve world problems. You're trying to feed the hungry. You're trying to shelter those that are unhoused. You're trying to grow productive citizens. You're trying to make sure there's clean water. You're trying to save the environment. So, how are you going to do that if you don't attract the most brightest and brilliant people? And the brightest and brilliant people are not going to come work for pennies. What they're going to decide to do is go work for a corporation, and then they will take part of their salary and make a donation and maybe serve on a board. But they're not really addressing the problem. So if we can get over this mindset of not compensating and not paying our people, we can invest more dollars in saving the environment, saving the housing people. We can stop throwing pennies at the problem and throw the real money that it needs to take to solve these problems.
Hey there, podcast family. If you're like me and deeply committed to improving your leadership skills and fostering better connections with your team, I've got something truly amazing to share with you. I'm proud to introduce the EMC Masterclass, something I talk about often as a certified trainer. It's an incredible program developed by the renowned Dr. Lola Gershfeld, an organizational psychologist and corporate emotional connection expert. You might remember her from a podcast episode where she shared invaluable insights into the world of emotional connection. Dr. Gershfeld's EMC Leaders courses are designed for anyone working with people. Whether you're a manager, supervisor, team leader, educator, coach, mentor, or a team member, this program is truly for everyone looking to enhance their communication and collaboration skills to raise more revenue for their mission. Now, let me tell you why the EMC Masterclass is a game changer. Dr. Gershfeld's groundbreaking emotional connection process has been integrated into top universities' curriculum and recognized by international organizations like ICF, HRCI, and SHRM. Humans are wired to seek emotional safety, and when we feel safe, we're more likely to take risks, share innovative ideas, and collaborate effectively. The EMC process is the catalyst for creating that emotional safety within your team. The virtual EMC Masterclass consists of 8 modules with 4 hours of expertly recorded material, 13 quizzes to reinforce your learning, and a workbook filled with activities for offline practice and something I still refer to daily. Ready to become an emotional connection master? Dr. Gershfeld is offering an exclusive detail for our podcast listeners. Use the code LEADWITHHEART to enjoy a generous 10% discount on the EMC Masterclass. Head over to emcleaders.com and enroll in the EMC Masterclass today. Yes, preach it, girl. I love having these conversations all day long because I always talk about, and I've said this multiple times on the podcast and on my LinkedIn, like high cost turnover equals high cost fundraising. And the whole purpose of an organization is to be good stewards of our money.
Yes.
So actually by investing in our people and their professional development, we're being good stewards of the money that the donors are giving us because it's costing less in the long run.
Business sense, and I don't understand why people check their business hat at the door when they're talking about nonprofit, because nonprofit is just a tax designation. It's not the business model. You need to retain your people so that you have that consistent knowledge bank. Because again, you're trying to solve these world problems. As a business, every time you get a new staff, it takes about 2 to 3 years to onboard them to get them where the last person was. And if us in this nonprofit industry are losing people after 18 months, after 2 years, that's why we're not making a huge dent in all of these problems that are happening around us. So I get very excited about this.
I think something that you said earlier was helping leaders be able to pause and have that time to think about the future. And I read a book, Future for Good. Trista Harris was also a keynote speaker at an equity summit that I went to back in October of 2023. And it was all about, a lot of times nonprofits, we can talk about the problem. We can complain about the problem that we're trying to solve, but we don't actually find a solution. Solutions aren't brought to the table because we're reacting to the problem at hand. And so how do you coach? Because it's a mindset shift, right? Like we have to be able to believe in ourselves to take that pause and see it as productive. So how do you coach nonprofit leaders in your framework to be able to think about the future and the solutions that come along with that?
Well, I created this framework called BUILD, and B is for brand. And we talked about that. That's really branding yourself and investing in yourself. And U is fun, unleash. But that's really, the U is really around unleashing the power of your board, because you can't do any of this if your board members don't have the right mindset. And then I is for inspire, L is for leverage, D is for discover. And so through that framework, I teach my CEOs how to have conversations with their board of directors, how to change the mindset, not only of themselves, but of the board, and how to introduce the topics of innovation to their boardroom. So a lot of times, just let's take the board agenda for example. A lot of times, I've talked to some very brilliant CEOs, and I say, well, why do you do your board agenda like that? And it's, oh, that's the way the other person did it, or that's the way it's always been done. And they don't think strategically about the time that they spend with their board members and how they can set up their board agenda to get generative questions done, to get your board members to start thinking about vision, to get your board members to start thinking about strategy. Everything that you do should have a purpose. Every move that you make should be a strategic move. It's all about momentum, and it moves your organization forward. And you have to have conscious thought around that. And that's what I teach the people that I coach.
Yes, I think that's so important. And it does start at the board level. So can you share along the lines of like your framework, a specific story of one of your clients and the example of generative questions that you have designed in a boardroom? Because I've had conversations a couple episodes back with Tucker Wanamaker, and we talked a lot about the idea of generative questions that produce a positive future. And I think it's so important to ask more of those questions. Do you have a specific story of a client that you have utilized this framework to see that increase in board engagement and raising more revenue?
Yes, I actually do. And one of the ones, when if I inherit a client or have a client that has a board that's not doing board giving, for example, they're just not doing board giving. They're not giving their, they're maybe giving their time, they may be giving their talent, but they're not giving their treasure. And they think that time and talent equates to treasure. One of the generative questions that I suggest that they use, and this client actually has used this one, is, and it doesn't have to be complicated. And that's what I want people to know. It does not have to be complicated. So the generative question that I introduce or have them introduce is, what are the top three organizations that you give to personally? And each board member asks that question, answers that question. And as they reflect on, here are the top three that I give to, then you say, well, why aren't we one of those? The other one that I like to introduce is, what was the last organization that you gave to, and why did you give to them? And that question also generates conversation, because what you will find out is a lot of board members will say, well, I gave to them because I was asked, or I gave to them because I saw a commercial, or I gave to them because I received something in the mail, or I gave to them. They'll come up with a myriad of reasons of why they gave and how they responded. And then it becomes a discussion about, okay, how can we position our organization to do that? That opens up the dialogue for conversation based on just those two generative questions.
Wow. That's amazing and so powerful, because they're such simple questions to ask. We want our organizations to be in the top three of our donors, and just asking those questions and then getting the board to think a little bit more about what, like questioning it, but in a positive way, not coming at them being like, you're not giving to our organization. We need you to give because 100% board giving, blah, 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 blah.
Correct.
You know, it's inspiring them to think about what causes they care about. And I think one of the things you said was because they asked. And I think so many CEOs don't view board members as donors. And so they say, oh, well, the give and get policy is $500 a year. They gave their $500. They're clear. They don't have to give to us anymore. But it's so much more than that, because that's more transactional. It's like you check the box, you gave, you're good. But our board is responsible, fiscally responsible for our organization. And it's also a way for them to realize their generosity through our mission. So it's not just they're up here aboard and they get to not be involved. I think time and talent is so important, but it is important to educate them on the importance of giving to the organization.
It's so critical. And that's the other part that I coach my clients on, is that you have to build relationships with your board members. I see this so often that our CEOs of our nonprofits only interact with their board members during that monthly board meeting, or if they meet quarterly during that quarterly board meeting. And one of the things that I say is you have to build relationships with each of your board members. Now, it might be a different level of relationship with each one, but the best advice I can give you is, one, with your board chair, meet with them on a monthly basis. My board chair knew the good, the bad, and the ugly, and everybody has to eat. So we had a standing lunch that we went to and develop that relationship. And if you're not doing that with your board chair, you need to do that with your board chair. The other one that you need to put focus on, in my opinion, is your executive committee. And so engaging your executive committee is key. And you engage your executive committee outside of the regular board meeting. So what does that look like? It could look like, in my case, my executive committee helped me put the agenda together for the board meeting. And so that was strategic in getting them involved. And then the next layer I say is everyone should have themselves a good board champion, a couple of them. That's the person that you might go to lunch with once or twice a week. You might have wine in their house, but those are the people that will have your back when something comes up that you know you need their power of influence in the boardroom, and they will serve as your mouthpiece. And so then the remaining of the boards, I say you should get out at least once a year and go visit them in their office or in their home and ask them how they're doing. Ask them, is there anything that you need? What do you think? How we're doing this year? Is there anything that you need that hasn't been provided? What do you think of the board meetings? Do you think we should improve them? What did you think of this project? But it takes time, and it's about building those relationships. Look, your board is your top donor. They shouldn't be looked at as a necessary evil, or they shouldn't be looked at taken for granted, for lack of a better word. They should not be taken for granted, because again, they should be giving their time, their talent, and their treasure. And as such, they are the family to the organization, and they are your top donors because they're doing all three of those. And so don't take them for granted and don't consider them a necessary evil. They are your partner in moving things forward, but you have to be strategic in how you engage your partner.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I love what you said about building relationships and checking in with them. Personally, I've sat on 5 boards over my career, and I've only properly been onboarded by one and only been checked in by that one. I sat on a few boards for more than 2 years, 5 years, and not once was I checked in on what are my strengths, is what I'm serving on appropriate, or do I need help? Like, none of that conversation happened. And I think, you know, it's not only from the beginning, but it's that continual relationship building, checking in, making sure that they're still connected to each other, and also understand the importance of their role in carrying out the mission.
So important. And that's what that L, the leverage, is. It's leveraging your board members' strengths. And how are you going to find out what their strengths are if you don't develop a relationship with them? That's the only way you're going to find out what their strengths are. Develop a relationship, talk to them. I had board members who owned timeshares, who owned condos, who had hunting leases. Okay, I'm in Texas. Let me say that. We hunt down here. Don't nobody call me and say, can't believe you're hunting. So in having those conversations with them, I was able to say, hey, it came time for, let's say, a gala and you needed a live auction. I was able to say, hey, don't you have this? Would you be able to present that as a live auction item? And you would not believe how they looked and say, oh yeah, I hadn't thought of that. They don't think like this. And so you have to position yourself where you really tap into and learn what their strengths are. And again, the only way you're going to do that is by having conversations with them outside of the boardroom. The boardroom does not lend itself to these types of conversation because hopefully you are efficient with your board time and you are having 1 hour and a half board meetings and not meetings that drag on and on. And the only person that's talking is the CEO of the organization.
Yeah. Along that lines, what are your thoughts? I think sometimes as board members, they come to a meeting, they only see a snapshot of the organization and what's happening, but they're not proactive in the actual mission and inviting people in to serve. And so what are your views on, number one, inviting other people either from the leadership team or the organization to a board meeting? And on the other side, inviting board members to participate in the mission?
I think that needs to be an integral part of how the organization moves forward in developing this team. So here's the thing, some of the best practices, having mission moments to kick off your board meetings. And that's where you can potentially have a client come in and talk about the impact of the program and have the board be able to ask them questions. Or you can have staff come in and talk about the program, right? When it comes to board engaging in programs, that is key. But what that requires the CEO to be organized. So here's a tip for you. Put together an annual calendar. Here, board members, here's a print old-fashioned. You can use a calendar invite as a follow-up, but an old-fashioned one-sheeter calendar that says, here's when our board meetings are. Here's when our program events are. The program events, let me just say this, the program events where you want the board members to attend. Here's where the program events are. And have that calendar, give it to them, but don't give it to them just one time. As a part of your board packet, have it at the beginning of the board packet. Because again, people are very busy. So it's not as if they intentionally are not showing up. Just life happens, right? They might forget, they might this. But if you can give them a calendar and even take it a step further, send them a calendar invite, maybe 72 hours before an event, you remind them and have a standard. And I'll say this, a standard. I serve on 5 boards too. Great souls. So this is one board that I serve on. It's called Village in the Valley. They do these events called First Fridays, right? And so on Fridays, if anybody know anything about me, Fridays and the weekends dedicated to my family. So I hadn't been to a First Friday. No one has said I needed to go to a First Friday. If I can avoid going, I will. So finally, one of the our co-chair called me and she said, you haven't been to a First Friday. And I said, no, I said, it's not one of the things that explain the situation. And she said, look, we ask that you attend at least one a quarter. So she set the standard for me. Oftentimes we don't set the standard. And our chairs are not bold enough to have those conversations of accountability. And what I know about human nature is if you let me get away with it, I will. And so a lot of times, the board members, if given the standard, will rise to the occasion. But again, if you let me get away with it, I will get away with it. That's just human nature. And so have the calendar, have an accountability process, have a board chair that's willing to have those tough conversations, and things will work out. But you got to have all of that in place. It's not that easy. Well, things are going to work out. That means you looked at who's on your board, who has the ability to be a strong board chair. You've positioned the organization and positioned them to be in the right place. You've talked about the standards. They know the standards. They're willing to have those tough conversations. You took the time to plan and you have a calendar in advance. So it sounds simple and easy, but it requires that you as the CEO get yourself together. And so when CEO says my board doesn't do anything, my first question is about them. And sometimes they don't like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously you have to do a little bit of your homework, but these simple and effective strategies work. Like you said, setting the standard and keeping people accountable to that standard and setting that precedent from early on will help build a more engaged board because they understand, they know what's expected of them, and they're continually reminded of what it is.
Yes, and it's okay. High-functioning people are okay with being reminded. And I think that if you are strategic in your recruitment process and you do a fabulous onboarding and you identify the right personalities that's going to help you with your movement, they will be okay. A lot of people say seeming bossy, but it's not really seeming bossy. It's holding people accountable.
Yeah, I love that. Well, we've talked about the board, and obviously that is a huge stress and pain point for CEOs. Burnout is huge in our sector, and it's normalized. And showing up at all hours, being available at all hours is just expected. And I think it's changing. I think it's changing a little bit. But what other stress pain points do you see that CEOs face and that you help to solve?
Well, another one is really, I always say people, if it wasn't for people, I could do this job. So oftentimes another stress indicator is staff. And so I talk about how are you engaging your staff in transformational leadership and effective communication? Because again, we can't do this job without people. And I know that turnover again can lead to stressors because if you are a small shop and you lose someone, then as the CEO, oftentimes you pick up those duties, right? And so if we can make sure, again, it all goes back to compensation. And that's why I spend a lot of time focused on the board. If we can compensate our people, and I mean, I'm not saying, you know, blow the budget, but if you can compensate your people, even with a recognition program or some type like that, the same way we want our clients to be treated and offered services, we want to make sure that we're taking care of our staff as well. And so people, if we can invest in people, that will help with the stress. The other one that I'm going to talk about is people, but it's more us. And so those who traditionally serve as a CEO in a nonprofit organization, I always, again, I'll go back to our mindset. And we need to work on our mindset and understand that we are not coming in servitude, but we're coming in service. And so I intentionally use the term CEO over executive director or founder because the conversation looks different when you own that you are the CEO of this nonprofit. And so when you're sitting down across from a CEO of a bank or a CEO of a certain corporation, that you bring value to the table. You're not there in servitude, you're there in service, and you're creating a win partnership. And so you have to own that. And as a CEO of a organization, you also have to make sure, and this goes back to developing, that you're developing the people around you and that you're taking care of yourself, because you cannot take care of others if you don't take care of yourself. And I think oftentimes we wear we have so many hats and we have this and that. We wear that as a badge of honor, and it's not a badge of honor. Maybe we were attracted to this industry because we're very giving people, and that's a blessing, but we cannot continue to wear that as a badge of honor because too often those in the nonprofit industry are burning themselves out and they're walking away from the industry. So when you walk away from the industry, you're walking away from all the people that you could potentially help because you simply refuse to take care of yourself and give yourself a break. And so I continue to go back to, it starts with you as the lead and the leader of that organization. You set the tone. You set the tone for yourself. You set the tone for your board of directors. You set the tone for your staff. You set the tone for your clients. And that's what you should be juggling instead of putting out fires. Sometimes we like putting out fires because we can, believe it or not, we can control the fires. We can go in there and this is what we do. We love that. We love the hands-on service and we can control the fires. The toilet stopped up. Oh, I can call somebody and get that taken care of. This happened. Oh, I can take care of that. But what we're not good at sometimes is being strategic and visionary. And instead of focusing on that weakness to build it up so we can do more, we just lean more into the fires. So ask yourself, am I leaning into the fire because it's actually comfortable in the fire? And it all starts with self.
Yeah, and I totally resonate with that. And I've seen in nonprofits, like this idea of reactivity, of constantly just reacting again to the problem or the fire and taking time to think long term. And what I sell my business on is fundraising is an inside job. So it starts with you personally, and then the people in your organization, and then the community. Because you have to decide how you want to lead, how you want to fundraise, how you want to show up. There's always a nuance there because you can only do so much self-development work and your organization could be toxic. And so it's hard to always say that because there's only so much responsibility on you personally, but it does start with you and then investing in the people in your organization who are delivering on the mission, like you said, and that actually makes more of a positive change in the world.
Yes, it does. And I think if we can get people to see that, that will start the ripple effect of the change that we need to see in our industry as a whole.
So do you have any last insights or advice for organizational leaders looking to implement this framework successfully?
Yes, I do. And so that advice would be to really examine self first and see where your strengths and your weaknesses are, and then focus on the one thing that you can change. I think a lot of times people want to make these massive change. And when you try to make a massive change, we don't make any change because it becomes overwhelming. And so just focus on the one or two things that you can change with consistency for yourself. And then one or two things that you can change in the way that you approach your board and staff. Something simple like restructuring your board agenda or your leadership staff meeting agendas can make a huge difference. And it's a simple step that we can take. It doesn't have to be these massive projects that we undertake. Simplicity, simple steps that you can change that will not overwhelm you or the process, but will have a huge impact.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And it's grounded in neuroscience, what you're saying. Like, when we get overwhelmed, our amygdala takes over our prefrontal cortex, and we're no longer able to think logically. We're no longer able to communicate effectively, and we lose that productivity. That if we took a moment to ask those questions and pause and notice and choose, then we're able to communicate more effectively and show up how we intended to in the first place.
That is so correct. You just nailed it, Miss Haley. Thank you for putting the science to that.
I'm a neuroscience geek, so I always like adding that level of, I can research it all day. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insight and your framework. I have learned so much about your build framework and just the work that you do and the simple and effective strategies that you can take to make an even greater impact. So Sabrina, where can people find you to learn more about you and the work that you do?
You can visit my website at www.support.com.
Well, thank you again, Sabrina, for being here. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for the great content that you're putting out.
If you have valued these stories or learned something from what you've heard, please share this podcast episode or follow me on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for your support, and together we can build a better community and world.